Everyone, I'd like to welcome our Rabbonim back to our conference calls with Rabbi Willig Shlita. We thank Rabbi for making time to be on the call. Without further ado, Rabbi Willig.
Thank you so much. Question number one. A high school bocher in an out-of-town mesifta suffers from OCD. He has been seeing a frum psychologist and has made some headway, but he is still struggling. His parents want to bring him to a noted psychiatrist, not a Shomer Shabbos, in hopes that he could treat him and perhaps put him on meds to help him. The Rosh Yeshiva does not feel that a psychiatrist is necessary, nor meds, and that he wants the Bocher to see a Rebbe that has experience in these matters, has taken some training in treating OCD. The parents don't want to rock the boat and disagree with the Rosh Yeshiva. Their son is happy with the Mesifta, and they are level-headed people. However, the parents have shared this with me, looking for direction and hoping that I could speak with the Rosh Yeshiva. What is my responsibility here? Do I advocate for the parents' position to the Rosh Yeshiva? Do I assure them the Rosh Yeshiva's experience with these matters? A great question. My advice would be as follows. The rabbi should arrange for the parents to meet we'll call it, Haredi psychiatrist, someone whose Shomer Mitzvah's credentials cannot be questioned by any Rosh Yeshiva. And there are a number of such individuals. And they should arrange for the Rosh Yeshiva to meet with this Haredi psychiatrist. Now, presumably the psychiatrist will explain to the Rosh Yeshiva that there certainly are cases where meds are appropriate. Now, if the Rosh Yeshiva concedes that point, that there are some cases where meds are appropriate, then we should ask that this psychiatrist should meet their son and decide in one meeting whether the son is included in an OCD person who needs these meds or not. If the Haredi psychiatrist decides that the person, the boy, needs meds, he can be treated by the noted psychiatrist, not a Shomer Shabbos, to give him the meds that are appropriate. However, if the Rosh Yeshiva does not agree with the Haredi psychiatrist, either he thinks that nobody needs meds, or he thinks that this boy doesn't need meds, they should ask the same Haredi psychiatrist if it is better for their son to stay in the Mesifta because he's happy without any treatment by a psychiatrist. I presume he can still stay with the frum psychologist. Or, in the opinion of this frum psychiatrist, Haredi psychiatrist, is it more worthwhile, because he needs treatment so badly, to take him out of this yeshiva and send him to a different yeshiva where he'll be able to receive the treatment from a psychiatrist for his OCD. That's my recommendation. Question two. A congregant recently purchased a refrigerator/freezer that does not have a Shabbos mode. They creatively, using magnets, were able to turn off all the lights and whistles on the appliance. However, when you open and then close the freezer, you can hear the freezer compressor go on with the door closing. They looked online and spoke with the manufacturer. There's no way to shut off the compressor, even if there was a Shabbos mode. Can they open and close the freezer on Shabbos? The short answer is no, because whenever you close the refrigerator, the compressor goes on. We call that a psik resha. Their intention may be primarily just to close the freezer, perhaps to preserve, we'll say, the cold air which is already there. But it's a psik resha that the compressor is going to go on immediately, and it's a psik resha de nichale because they want more of the cold air to come in. The food should remain cold. And the psik resha de nichale, we paskin, is prohibited, especially we're discussing a case where it goes on immediately. Not later, but immediately. Now, there is one view. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Shin Yud Dalet Sif Aleph, look at the Mogen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, there is one view that seems to indicate that Pesik Resha, even the Nichale, is muta by the Rabbonans. Perhaps Trumas Adeshin holds that way, perhaps Tosus and Psochim. And therefore, if somebody did this, we would have, and we can't say it's a Mechal Shabbos for certain. But that view was rejected by the Mishnah Berurah. Some claim even the Shulchan Aruch never held that way. And so it's hard to rely upon that sheet. Aside from the fact that there are some who claim that electric circuitry is a Daraisa. So therefore, I would say that they have to not open the freezer on Shabbos. If that becomes impossible, they have to buy a new freezer for Shabbos use. I don't see another way out of this one. Question number three. Balabas grew up in a non-from, out-of-town community. His mother is not well. He's trying to plan for Shiva whenever it happens. His father insists that his sister must count towards the Shiva minion they'll have in their house. Assuming he can't convince his father to not include his sister in the minion, it is better for him to, A, daven b'yichidus, than to participate in the minion, but at least be mekayim kibbutz av by sitting with the family, or B, should he sit Shiva in his home without the rest of his family, where he would have a Shiva minyan kalach. Now, there's a third possibility, which I'd recommend strongly, to arrange that in his father's house, there'll be 10 people without his sister. Now, in most communities, there's a possibility of doing that. It's true, it's a non-frum, out-of-town community, but to find 10 Jewish males over the age of 13, it's not insurmountable. If you have to pay a few dollars to do it, it's worthwhile. This way, he can have both. He can sit with his family as well as have a minion without his sister. Now, if that's impossible, so it depends. If he feels that he really has to be with his family, because the alternative would be a break in the family, which is very unhealthy, very unhealthy, then I believe he should stay with the family. He should daven what we call b'yichidus. Now, if that itself will cause a stir, I believe it's permissible for him to daven in the room where others are to be found, even if there are his sisters in the room. But if his sister's, let's say, towards the back, he can sit towards the front or on the side, far away from any women. He should view it as davening b'yichidus. He will not answer to their, we'll call drum shabbat kedusha. He's not going to answer to kaddish or kedusha or baruch hu or chazar hashatz. Whatever requires a minyan, he will not answer amen, etc. to those recitations. And at the same time, he's davening what we call b'yichidus, in order to preserve the family unity. It's a very high priority, especially in such a case. If, on the other hand, the father doesn't care, so you want to sit Shiva in your own house, it's maybe more convenient for you. You should try very hard not to couch it in terms of the sister's minion counting. Just say, no, I have many family friends and I have neighbors and I have many other acquaintances who live near me in my community, and they won't be able to come and make a Shiva call if I'm in the out-of-town community. And if the father doesn't care about it, then he can do that, and then they have the advantage of being able to have a Shiva minyan kalocha. Obviously, it depends upon the specifics, the personalities of the father, of the son, the relationship between them. So this the local rabbi has to figure out. Question four. What is the shul to do when very few people are able to read the Haftarah? The shul hires a Baal Koreh to lane every Shabbos. Is it permissible for the shul to call anyone who can recite the brachos of the Haftarah, while the Baal Koreh can read the Haftarah from a Tanakh, parentheses, not a Haftarah book, but not a klaf? If not, the rabbi and one or two people will be receiving mafter every week. In my opinion, it's permissible for the shul to call anyone to recite the brachos, and the Baal Koreh or anybody else can read the Haftarah either from a Tanakh, even from a Haftorah book or a plain Chumash, I believe it's permissible. Question number five. With the winter arriving and sunrise getting much later, as it was at the end of October, how lenient can one be in Brocha for Talis and Tefillin? Is there a difference? That's number one. Question two. Is there a difference between davening after Misha Yakir or after sunrise? If you are not davening Kivah Sikin, even davening at 6:45 minyan will be getting through Shimon Esrei for 2 months before sunrise. That's the question. Excellent question. We'll answer the first question first. The Brocha for Talis and Tefillin is Misha Yakir, but no one knows when Misha Yakir is. When is it? Every person is going to make an experiment every day. How is what's called four amos, what's called cheles, what's called a friend is a friend, but not too good a friend. It's impossible for you and me to figure out exactly when Misha Yakir is. And there's an additional question to depend upon, is it a cloudy day or is it going to be a sunny day? There are many considerations. We have to be bound by precedent and what we find on the calendars. So in the calendars, these days in the New York area, Maizmanim and others print three different versions of Misha Yakir, all based upon various opinions in Yerushalayim and calculating the number of degrees that the sun is beneath the horizon at that time and extrapolating it and having every day here in the New York area. So they print 10.2 degrees beneath the horizon, 11 and 11.5. Today in New York, they came to those three from the most strict to the most lenient, were 545, 541, and 538. So far, it's pretty good. It's going to get later as we go. In my view, if necessary, a person can rely on an opinion which is even more lenient than these three Zmanim. The most lenient is the Prima Godim, and Simon Yudches says that the custom was 6 minutes after Alos HaShachar is already Misha Yakir. That's hard for me to accept, but there was a psak of the Kaf HaChaim in Simon Yudches, Sivkot Yudches, who records Minhag Yerushalayim, to calculate Misha Yakir 1 hour before sunrise. Clearly he's referring to Yerushalayim or Bavel, which are the same basically. He's talking in the equinox, Nisan or Tishrei. You look up on the charts, you'll see that's 12.9 degrees beneath the horizon. It's an earlier time than the other three times. For example, today, again, 545, 541, 538 are the printed Zmanim and Zmanim and others, and 12.9 comes out to 530, a full 8 minutes before the earliest man of 11.5, and it's not such a hard cheshbon to make. If you don't have my chart of 12.9, which nobody has, you can just take the difference between 10.2 and 11.5, which is 1.3. Here it's a total of 7 minutes. And then you add that same amount going backwards, which would be between 11.5 and 12.8. And you say, that's the time. I'll come to 5:31, for example. Now, of course, my time have seconds also. I'm not giving you the seconds, just approximations. So if you follow my cheshbon, which is 12.9, in the winter, at the peak of winter, when the Misha Yakir is as late as it gets, it is not later than 6:08, January 1st through 12th. That's as late as it gets at that time. Now, of course, at the very beginning of March, or the very beginning of November, just before the clock has changed, it can be even later than that. I think it's the latest it could possibly be in New York is 6:13 on March the 8th. And it could be as late as 6:24 on the 7th of November. I think those are the latest dates possible before the clock change, respectively. Okay, that's going to be a great difficulty. But that's the time for the bracha of a talis and tefillin. Now, of course, you can daven earlier. You can daven at Alos HaShachar and make the bracha on talis and tefillin later. Some say, well, you make the bracha on talis and tefillin just before you say the bracha of Yotzer Or, which makes a lot of sense, because even Yotzer Or, according to some poskim, should not be recited before Misha Yakir. In a pinch, there are Mekilim and not Shaila. And therefore, perhaps, if a person is not making the bracha when he puts on the talis and tefillin right away because it's too early, he would be well advised to make the bracha on the talis and tefillin just before Aleinu, just before he takes them off. After all, you can make a bracha on talis and tefillin as long as the talis and tefillin are on you. In some ways, we say the later the better. This is what we did when I came to my community. The first shiur I gave as a rabbi-elect was in late 1973, when there was all year long daylight savings time. So the sun rose in New York at that time, January 1st, 1974, not at 7:20, but rather at 8:20. So everyone was in a tremendous turmoil. What, 8:20? So I told them they can start at Alos HaShachar and make the bracha talis and tefillin at the end of davening, you know, before Ashrei, before second Ashrei, before Aleinu, at that point in time. And part of my cheshbon was that there were those who have a much more strict view of Misha Yakir. If you look in the Dirshu in Siman Yud Ches in footnote 12, they have Rav Moshe says it's only 35 to 40 minutes before Netzach Hamah. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's less than 50. And Rav Yashiv says it's only 30. So that's, you know, Chumad Dikah Shurim. So if you're putting on your talis and tefillin before those shurim, you're following the Ma'ariv Zmanim or even earlier, so you put it on with the bracha. But if you're not making the bracha when you're putting it on anyway, we'd likely pay to wait till late. So you can even be saying the bracha properly according to the machmirim, such as Rav Moshe, Rav Yashiv, and others. That's what I recommend. That's as far as Misha Yakir. What about davening before or after sunrise? So my view is we can rely upon the Pri Chodesh, who's quoted by the Bri Halacha, Tzimin Pei Tesif Aleph, the Ramach L'Yotza. That is no difference, the Halacha, between davening before sunrise or after sunrise. The best is to daven at sunrise. That's called Vesikin. But once you're not doing that, according to Pri Chodesh, it doesn't matter if you're doing it after sunrise or before sunrise. And therefore, I feel that we can rely on this Pri Chodesh and daven before sunrise every day for 2 months. No problem, because it doesn't matter if you're davening before sunrise or after sunrise. Kain nirali. Question number 6. Regarding the halachas of nida, the halacha is that a husband and wife may share a drink if someone else drinks from the cup in between them. The reason for this seems to be because when someone else drinks from the cup in between, it is no longer an act of intimacy. A. Can one say the same when a whole family is sharing one big gulp-style drink? Would the husband and wife need someone to drink in between them? Or since this type of drinking is clearly not intimate, since many people are sharing the same drink, this is not necessary? Yordeh Simakuf Tzadi Hei has these halachos of Harchakos. If you look in Pisrei Tshuva, Sif Katan Hei, you get an impression that if someone else drank before the wife, and then the wife drinks, the husband may not drink. I would say, based upon that, that the same would be true, even if it's not one person, or it turns into many people. And whether there's drinking before the couple or after the couple, it wouldn't matter. I think you should stick to the strict law, and if you're doing so, make sure someone drinks in between. B, can a husband be permitted to drink from the Nida's cup if she is in another room? What is considered another room? If a kitchen and dining room are separated by a thin wall, is that considered another room? What if there's a window or opening in the wall, is that considered a separate room? So, the post of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, Mincha Shlomo Chelik Bei Simon Lama Dalet. Excuse me. Take that back. That was the next question. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Simon Kuf Tzadi Hei Ramah Siv Dalet that's permissible if Holcha Lo. In other words, he may drink the cup if she left. She walked away. Where did she walk away? So if you look in Rabbi Feivel Cohen's Bari HaShulchan, the Bamas Levi'im, he says it means she walked away to the point where he cannot see her. It's not a question whether there's a room or no room, door, wall, as long as window, as long as he cannot see her, he may drink. If he can't see her, then he may not drink. Question 7. If the power goes out on Shabbos and is then turned back on by the power company, is one permitted to use that water from the urn if it has been reheated? So here Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says in Chelik Beis Simon Lamed Daled, someone who has his food on a hot plate and there's a blackout and the electricity goes down and Goyim fix the electricity and it goes on again, it's mutter. Why is it mutter? Didn't the Goy heat it up? Well, he says, the guy was not trying to heat up this fellow's plata. The guy is just trying to fix the electricity for the whole town or the whole area where the lights went out. So the fact that the plata goes on is what we call in our language a psikresha. Psikresha, which is done by a guy, is permissible, and therefore the guy didn't do something which is prohibited, and therefore there's no Easter, what we'll call Maisa Shabbos. That if something is done illicitly by a Jew or a non-Jew, that there's a prohibition after the fact. It's not apply in the case where a goy did it in a situation of segregation. There may be other issues. We know when it comes to hot food, there's issues of what you call shehiya and hachzara and hanocha, all these serious violations. It seems they would not apply in this particular case, because the Easter of Shehiyah is what's called Shema Yechata Begacholim, that you may stoke the coals or otherwise adjust the fire. Typically an urn has no adjustments, it's either on or off, and therefore that consideration does not exist. The other prohibitions, those were called Nirek and Mevashel, that it looks like cooking, that's only if you do something. Here you were passive, you didn't do anything, you put it on for before Shabbos. The power went off, the power went on. That's not called Nirek HaMevashel. So therefore, I believe it's permissible to use this water if the urn was reheated by the power company, which is not Jewish. Question 8. Giving gifts to a mourner after Shloshim for a parent, when is it permitted, when is it not permitted? There are many authorities who discuss this. I'll quote you from the Sefer called the Divrei Sofrim. He has a lengthy, beautiful 2 volumes in the Chos Avelis, as well as a Kitzer. His lengthy edition, Shin Pei Hei, Sif Aleph, is quoted in his short edition, Perek Nun Dalet Sif Gimel. He has a principle, a person is permitted to give a gift to an Avel in a situation in which there is an obligation to give that gift. It's not just he decides one day to give a gift. It's sort of obligatory. He gives an example. A man is obligated to b'mesameach es ishto b'regel, to make his wife happy on Yontif, and one of the ways is to buy her begodim, b'kavod Yontif, new clothes. So, and the Divrei Sofrim writes, that's an obligation. So even though your wife is an avelis, you may do so because you are obligated to do so. It's not just a discretionary matana. He gives an example over there, that there were customs on Hanukkah or Purim, they give a gift to the Rav or to the Malamed in the school. If that's what's normally done, that should be done. That's permissible to be done. Of course, perhaps we can expand somewhat on what should be done, not just discretionarily. Let's say, for example, a person is obligated to make his wife happy, not just on Yontif. That's the technical obligation. Isha Bala Mesamcha. according to some authorities. As far as Simchas Yontif is concerned, we know v'simach ha'ishto ha'shalokach is a lifelong responsibility, according to many poskim, that a man's supposed to make his wife happy throughout their marriage. And some situations in today's society will say the words call for a gift. I'll give an example called a birthday. In some marriages, every single year the husband buys his wife or wife buys the husband a birthday present. You won't find it in the Shulchan Aruch. Not every couple does it. But if it's done every single year, so it becomes an expectation, I believe it would be permissible for it to be done even during the avelus of the spouse. And, you know, there could be many other similar circumstances. Every Rav has to know how to evaluate them. In addition, it's very possible that it's permissible to give a gift on Shabbos. You have to overcome the Shabbos problems. Perhaps you can be mezaka before Shabbos, or some gifts don't require that. I'm not going to the Shabbos now. And the reason for this is as follows. The Easter of giving gifts is under the general heading of She'elat Shalom. And there are different, the Gemara records two different customs, of Mokom Shenogu to have She'elat Shalom b'Shabbos, and some places do not. Our place, we do. And therefore, the same as on Shabbos, we can do She'elat Shalom, so too we can give gifts on Shabbos during the period of mourning. Now, there are those who say, in general, that She'elat Shalom is permissible after Shloshim, even though it seems to be against the classical sources that say whatever is Asa in Shloshim for any Avil, it's Asa for a parent for the sum total of 12 months. It's an extension of the 30-day period. Despite that fact, if you look in the Ramah there in Yerodeh Siman Shin Pei Hesafal, he quotes an opinion that after 30 days, She'elat Shalom is permissible. Maybe our She'elat Shalom is not really She'elat Shalom. One could suggest that this would apply to Matanos as well. Where's the source for this? In Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah, this is Aruch HaYom. Yeah, Mishnah Berurah. Hilchos Purim. Simetov Reish Tzadi Vav Sivkot Chaf Aleph. Based on the Taz there, Sivkot Gimel. Seems to say it's permissible to send Shalach Manos, although the Ramos says don't send Shalach Manos to an Avil for a month or for a year. But there's a custom that we're not so careful about She'elat Shalom after the month is over, even for a parent. And if that would be the case, you can do Shalach Manos for that person, and the same as the Shalach Manos is mutter, so too with other kinds of presents when it's necessary. Final question, number 9. As is evident from various sources, such as the notes in Hanhagos HaRav Machzorim, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik held that various differences in the wording of Nusach Ashkenaz, different from the usual wording printed in Ashkenaz Siddurim. For example, the Mesorah HaRav Siddur mentions that he would switch the last two phrases before the Chasima of Birchas Yerushalayim and Shmoneh Esrei. It's quoted as being similar to Nusach Ari. Also, he would always recite Sim Shalom and Mincha Marv throughout the year, never Shalom Rav. Are these and other various versions used by the Rav, one, permitted, two, encouraged, to be employed by an individual Mispalel, A, in his personal davening, B, when he acts as a Shliach Tzibur? Does the Rav of the Shul have any rights or limits in regard to this over other Mispalelim in the Shul? Is the Shul able to change its version of the Nusach HaTfilah based on these Hanhagos HaRav? Would a Tzibur or individual need Hataras HaDarim to make any of these changes? To my knowledge, the Rav never asked his Talmidim to daven his Nusach. His Nusach was primarily Nusach HaGra. The Gra changed the last two Chasimas. It happens to be in the Chabad Nusach too, but the Rav did it, to my knowledge, not because of Chabad, but because of the Minig HaGra. Same with Sim Shalom, as far as I know. He followed Minig HaGra. And there are other things that the Rav davened. When the Rav said Aleinu, instead of Moshe Vikaro, Bashamayim Ali said Bechisei Kavodo, which is the Nusach HaGra. In Kaddish, he said V'yis Ala, and he left out V'yis Halal, also Nusach HaGra. We all heard these things from the Rav. He never asked us to follow his Nusach. He never told us, never asked us. And therefore, I think that we should not be changing the Nusach to Nusach HaGra. I'm not opposed to someone who is davening a Nusach HaGra Shul, or a person has a specific affinity to Nisuch HaGra, wants to daven Nisuch HaGra in all matters, of course we cannot staff such a person. But I do not believe Rabbanim should be advocating for the Nisuch HaGra. The Nisuch HaGra was for Yechidim, who follow the Gra on other matters. And the average Balabas would be better advised to just read from the regular Siddur, as long as there's no question of any mistakes. It's just a matter of different Nuskos, such as the things we mentioned. The order of, in the Bracha Boni Yerushalayim, and Sim Shalom, and Kisei Kavodo, and the Yitzhalot. I should also add Bonei Barachamav Yerushalayim, the Rav left out Barachamav, again the Nisuch HaGra. In all those cases, I think the average person should be advised to follow the minhag that he received from his parents or from his shuls, which in most cases is different than the Nisuch HaGra that the Rav employed. That's as far as what should be advocated. This is, again, individual mispal. Is it permitted for an individual mispal? Absolutely yes. You can follow Nisuch HaGra. Should it be encouraged? I believe the answer to that question is no. This is all in his personal davening. As far as a shliach tzibur, then I think it's even more of a reason that we should not be changing into Nisuch HaGra when it's just a matter of Nusach, because we are Nusach Ashkenaz. Nusach Ashkenaz is not Nusach HaGra. The Gra davened 99% Nusach Ashkenaz, but there's a significant 1% that he changed things around. The Gra of the role of Chochmaso felt that certain texts were more accurate, and who far be it for me to argue with the Gra. But since we have Minhag Ashkenaz, I believe the Shliach Tzibur in particular should be encouraged to follow Minhag Ashkenaz. This is all situations where it's only a matter of Nusach. Noah would say, to my knowledge, that this is a ma'akev in any direction. The versions of the order of Birchas Yishlam Shemun Esrei, Sim Shalom, Shalom Rav, Na Me'akev, Kisei Kvodo, V'Yishalal, Barachma V'Yishalayim. I don't think anyone thinks anything is ma'akev in these cases. It's just a matter of Nusach. However, there can be cases where the Rav does have quote-unquote rights, not in the above-mentioned cases, but rather where it's a question of halacha. If the Rav feels it's a halacha question, the rabbi in any shul, I believe that he has, quote, rights to institute certain changes from the status quo that he inherited from his predecessor, because he, you know, he's now the halacha decisor for the shul. In that, included in that purview, would be certain changes that the Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, made. I'll give one example. You know, there are many shuls that in Aseret Yemei Tshuva, they say Osa HaShalom in Ender Shemona Esrei. The Rav was absolutely unalterably opposed to this change, so much so that I was once there when the Chazan said Osa HaShalom, and he started going on, and the Rav made him go back and say the bracha again. That's how strongly he felt about that change. Therefore, if a rabbi comes into a shul and they're saying Osa HaShalom, and he wants to change to Mevarech, he's within his rights. Fortunately for us, in the last number of years, we have Art Scroll. Before Art Scroll, if you look at the old Tikkun Meir Siddurim, there was only one version, Osa HaShalom. Now they cleverly write, authorities differ as to the proper conclusion of this bracha. So now the rabbi can say, listen, the authorities differ. I hold like this authority. What will happen if a person decides he still wants to do the other text of Osa HaShalom? If he does it privately, of course, nobody can stop him. If he does it publicly, the truth is you also really can't stop him, because even though you think HaMavarach HaSamei Yitzhoa B'Shalom is the proper Nusach, and even though the Rav would make him go back, you and I are not the Rav. We can't make anybody go back, and we can only encourage HaMavarach, and we would allow Osa for those, usually the Yekas are very strong on this, and it's hard to get them to change their original custom. The Rav made other changes in Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Let's start with Rosh Hashanah. Just give one example. There are many others, but this is one example. The Rav felt that the pasuk in Zichronos, Zecher also l'niflosov, Chan Racham Hashem, is not Zichronos. because it doesn't ask Hashem to remember anything. Not that he did remember, not that he will remember. He just made a monument. That's Zecher Asa. So therefore, he felt that that was just a mistake. That was just together with the next psukim of Yizkol Olam Briso. And he threw in another pasuk. And in my shul, that's what we do. I'm the chazan and Musaf Rosh Hashanah, so I can do what I want, but I try very hard not to make changes. But here, I feel it's within my quote-unquote rights to make this change because I am a Talmud of my Rebbe, and the Rebbe convinced us that it's a proper change, and in fact, there are new scholars which have to change. But here, that's just a matter of nusuch. It's a matter of you want to have 10 psukim of zichronos, and that's why I think it's such a change would be okay. And another example in Yasser HaSim HaTshuva, as the Rebbe is very, very strong, they have to say slichas in Yom Kippur, it's a mefurash of mechaber, and Simon Tov Reish Chof. Unfortunately, the Machzorim today don't have slichas, even Artskol has no reference to slichas, which is a shame, because it's din mefurash in Shulchan Aruch. I believe it should be done, and I exercise my quote-unquote right to have it done in my shul. Of course, Rome wasn't built in a day, and I came in to the shul, and I started to ask the Bali Tfilah to make these changes, and I was a Baal Tefillah for Musaf from the first year. I did my own change, but it was a different Baal Tefillah for Yom Kippur first few years, and he said, I can't do this. I'm not used to it. I don't know anything about it. When I was asked to be the Baal Tefillah for Musaf Yom Kippur, I said, I'll do it, but I have to say Slichas, and the Baal Shachris and the Baal Mincha also were into Slichas. One was the Avanusuch Sfarad. One was from the German community where they say a lot of Slichas. So with their cooperation, we just printed up slichas, you know, and there is different ways, and we do it. That's because it's a halacha quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. That's just a matter of what goes what word to be said in a particular nusach. There were also changes that the Chayada made in the Amitz Koach, the nusach avod of Yom Kippur, and when I came in as the Baal Tefillah, you know, when I was a private citizen, I made the changes. When I came Baal Tefillah, I made the changes. After a number of years, there was so many changes, I decided to somehow try to defend Nutzach Amitz Koach in some of its quote-unquote mistakes that the Chayadim accuses the Python of making. So those I went back to the Amitz Koach as it is, but others which I cannot properly explain, so I say it the way that the Chayadim required, because he said it's a halacha, you got to follow the Seder Avoda as they had it in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, these are all examples of Maseret Yom Teshuva. It's not day in and day out, so most of the year, the Nusach HaRav, as you might call it, it makes almost no Roshem in my shul. There are those, just to give an example, who will follow the Rav at a minute of saying Hashem Tzvasei Tiftach and Yil Rasim Refi out loud, which is a very rare custom. The rest of the world doesn't do it. There were those in my shul who do it, and of course I would never stop them from doing it. That's what the Rebbe did. Those who don't do it, they're following the other poskim who say it's not necessary, so we don't stop them either. So that's one of the cases which even on a day in day out basis, there are those who follow the Rav's Nusach and don't follow the Rav's Nusach, and I believe that we should leave that well enough alone. Now, the Rav had a nusach not to say the last bracha that we say in Ma'ariv, Birchas Krishma. Baruch Hashem Le'olam didn't say it. He said just Hashkivenu and then ran right to Kaddish. That's not Minig Ashkenaz. It's going back to the Bali Atosis and earlier that he said Baruch Hashem Le'olam. So in my shul, that's what we do. If someone doesn't want to say it, it's a big problem. Some of the yekas go ballistic. A guy sometimes won't say it and he'll just say, Shema Yisrael Ad, and then he'll wait till everyone finishes and they'll just start Kaddish. They really are correct. A person should not be changing the Nusach from the Nusach of the Shul as a general principle, and that's what we should try to uphold. This is a brief summary of some of the Rav's Hanhagos. There are many, many more, and that requires a much longer discussion, which is not for now. So I thank you very much for listening, and perhaps we'll have another shiur if the participants are interested.
Rebbe, thank you very much. We hope we can call upon you soon again. And I want to thank the Rebbe for being on the call. Have a good evening.
Bye.
Take care.